Hello and welcome back to the CTV show here on this Tuesday morning, December 5th, fresh off of one of the more exciting Monday night football games last night. Another good, exciting week in the NFL. I'm Thomas Pogranik, as always, joined by Christian Catanacci. Cat, what's going on, man?
Doing great, Pog. I'm doing great. Switch up today. We're recording this actually the Tuesday that you guys will be listening to this early in the morning, as opposed to our Monday night. So we did watch the game yesterday. It was a weird one. It was entertaining for once. Finally, a Monday night football game that, in Pac's case, was good for Survivor, but for not many people, right? Trevor Lawrence goes down. It sounds like he avoided a major injury, which is good. We'll await to hear what his MRI is saying today, because he is undergoing an MRI. But the Bengals pull it off. The Jags, who controlled their own destiny for the one seed, unfortunately, the way things happen, that isn't necessarily the case anymore. Whether that's because of Trevor Lawrence's injury, I mean, the game was close regardless, but you definitely would like to have seen him finish the game. And I mean, I personally was like, wow, I was looking at Jacksonville's schedule. I was like, you know what? Like, this could be a team that could finish in the one seed. And obviously, the NFL has other plans, but that was a pretty big win for Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, they stay alive in the playoff race. Jake Browning looked really good. The team looked great, other than that Tyler Boyd interception, which is still one of the wildest plays I've ever seen. Just crazy for him to throw that ball. But no, they looked good. And the one thing I'll say about all this is, I love the fact that the NFL keeps us in it throughout the season, because there was a point a couple weeks ago where if you just looked at the schedules, you thought all the divisions are wrapped up and a team like Cincinnati has no shot. And we've been proven that that is not true at all, because not only are the Bengals still very in it, but that AFC South is now wide open with the Jags just one game ahead. The status of Trevor Lawrence, unknown for the next couple of weeks. Hopefully he's okay. Honestly, it feels like it may have been best case scenario based on the initial reports, as bad as that does sound to say. But when he went down, I was thinking, you know, he got kind of stepped on his Achilles. That could be a big problem. The way he twisted and fell back, I was worried he could have torn or popped something in his knee. So if it's only an ankle sprain and there's no long-term damage, like we saw Mahomes play in the Super Bowl with a high ankle sprain. So I think there is a way that he can get back sooner rather than later, which hopefully we get to see. But yeah, the Texans and Colts, and we're going to talk about one of those teams today, but well alive in that AFC South playoff race. And who knows, we could get a very unexpected division winner potentially in the AFC.
Absolutely. And you want to talk about, I mean, just a crazy wild week 13. We can start right with that 49ers and Philadelphia game on Sunday evening. I mean, there was a lot to take in with this game, right? Like, everyone expected it to be a close game. I mean, if you look at just where the money was, it was sort of dead 50-50, right? I know everyone was questioning, why is San Francisco favorites by 3.5 points on the road with Philly 10-1, blah, 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 whatever, right? San Francisco goes into Philadelphia and absolutely beats the piss out of them. 42-19, they were playing. It felt personal at that point, right? These teams have talked a lot of, you know what, right? Over the last year or so, right? And the 49ers took it to him. Look, I for one, am I shocked that the 49ers won this game? No, I'm absolutely not. I picked the 49ers. I picked them by the spread. But am I shocked that they won by 22 at the link? Absolutely. This is something that I never saw coming. I look at Philadelphia as a team that, like, there's no beating around the bush. Last 2 years, they've been, if not the best team in the whole NFL. So you don't see a team that's physical, that controls the ball like Philadelphia does, just get blown out at home like this. I want to know what you have to take away from here, because I have a few things that I got to say after too.
So I actually have been on the train that the 49ers are the best team in the NFL. I actually said that on this podcast.
Yes, you did.
After their 3-game losing streak, I said, at their best, like, listen, it's still early. There's peaks and valleys to a season. At their best, I still think that they're the best team. Philadelphia, I think they've sort of avoided the big bad wolf that is the L column for a long time, and they've had some very close calls, and I almost feel like they might have just been due for a loss. And I mean, if you look at the stretch of games that they've just been on, they played the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the Bills, and the 49ers in essentially their last four games. And they've gone 3-1. Like, that's very, very impressive for any team to have that stretch of a season. So the fact that they lost, I honestly wouldn't put too much stock into it. I still think that they're a very, very good team. The only thing that this does is, once again, similar to the Jacksonville spiel I just went on, it keeps things interesting. Now there's a race for the one seed. Now there's a race for the NFC East. They really had a chance to take a big, uncatchable gap over Dallas and over San Francisco, and they didn't do that. So that is the only sort of long-term concern, because in the playoffs, you'd think that they're going to play a Dallas or a San Francisco if they get to the NFC Championship. In my eyes, it's going to be two of those three teams playing. So this is the only real reason, like, maybe now if they are there, they don't play at home because they have just slipped up. They now go play Dallas in Dallas. They're underdogs in that game as well. I did take Philly against the spread last week in our spread picks, and my reasoning behind that was just that this is a game I feel like it's a toss-up. The fact that I'm getting a couple points, I'll take the home team as an underdog. Like you said, I'm not surprised that they lost. I am very, very surprised that they were blown out. It feels like a game that San Francisco, they took a lead late, and then it just got very, very out of hand, and they just continued to keep their foot on the gas pedal. So long term, I'm not concerned about Philly at all, just like I wasn't concerned about the Cowboys in week 4, week 5, whenever it was, where they were blown out by the 49ers. This stuff happens. These are very, very good football teams. They've proven that they can win at a consistent level for years now, and that's just how it goes sometimes. But long term, I expect Philly to be playing in some very, very meaningful football games in January, and I still have confidence that they can, they have the pieces at least to get results.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can't disagree with everything you just said. And even look at this game. Like, Philadelphia had two red zone trips early. They kick field goals there. If they get touchdowns, even one touchdown and a field goal, and that game's 10-0 as opposed to 6-0, maybe this game's different, right? I know for a fact this game would be different if they scored two touchdowns and the game's 14-0. I know that Philadelphia playing with a lead is a very, very scary team. With that being said, it's hard to ignore. I mean, I think this either shows you one of two things. It's either that the 49ers are far and above the teams in the NFC, because I still think they're levels above the Cowboys, even though the Cowboys have been playing much better football as of recent. I just thought that Philadelphia was maybe a little closer to San Francisco as opposed to San Francisco being at level above Philadelphia, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, I know that the team dynamics are different, right? I'm going to pull out a stat here that the Philadelphia Eagles are 7-1 in one score games this year. There was a team last year that also finished with an incredible record that a lot of people were calling frauds because they just seemed to be pulling wins out of their butt all year long. And that was the Minnesota Vikings, right? I get it. You can't just go and say, oh, they're winning close games. That's what you got to do, right? Like, that's a sign of a good team, right? You find a way to win, right? Even when you don't have it in you, you don't have your best game, you find ways to pull it out. And Philadelphia, kudos to them. They've been doing that all year. But is it too much of a sign to, like, ignore at this point? Like, I don't want to, like, jump into conclusions and say, oh, this team is capped because, or they're not necessarily the Philadelphia Eagles of last year, because I disagree with that in a sense. I think they're still a good football team. Now, I thought Philadelphia was the best team in the NFC last year. I think that's now San Francisco. But I want to see how this next stretch of games plays out. I know they don't have the hardest schedule, but in Dallas, in Seattle, those are two big games. I know Seattle's, you get one of two teams, right? You can either get Geno Smith throwing dots all everywhere, or you can get Seattle that can't move the ball, right? Rivals of Dallas this weekend, and then they finish off with two Giants, and I believe they have one game mixed in there with another inferior opponent. Regardless, I would like to see the Eagles to regain my opinion on them. Not that it matters in their sense, but I would like them to have one solid, convincing win, whether that's on the road against Dallas, which it might be a little tough. Usually those two teams split it. I would like to see them beat Seattle on the road convincingly, not just by the skin of their teeth, and then taking care of business with your Giants, because the Giants are going to be looking to play spoiler. Look, are the Giants going to win? Probably not. They're probably going to be underdogs by 15, 20 points in both those games, right? But this is an Eagles team that, let's let's not lie here. Like their opinion, the people's opinion of the Philadelphia Eagles definitely took a hit after this game on Sunday. Now, you could talk about how that doesn't really matter because the media is the media. They're going to talk regardless. But the 49ers are the upper echelon team of in the NFC, clearly, right? So if you have to now potentially go into San Francisco, what could you take away from this game that makes you positive in any sense, right? Like they beat the brakes off you. And I think that's where Philadelphia is at this point. And now I get it. 5 weeks left in the season, there's a lot can change. But Philadelphia has a lot of ground to change to make up with the season having less than a month worth of games left. With that being said, there is somebody that deserves his flowers a little bit. And I know Pac has given Mr. Brock Purdy a ton of flowers over the last year or so ever since that. I think it was actually this time last year where he just played his first NFL game. That's because right. Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, right?
The Dolphins were 8-3
yeah.
last year. They're 8-3 this year. They ended up going to 8-8 last year. And this year, they're 9-3 so...
You got over that. Yeah. You got over that. But yeah, so we're going to, you know, like we like to have fun on this podcast. And I figured that it'd be very on topic to play a game around Brock Purdy. So I'm going to ask Pac a series of questions. Just pick one quarterback over the other. And it's going to be Brock Purdy versus some pretty well-known young-ish quarterbacks in the NFL. When Pac's going to basically say Brock or Block. That is the name of the game. Brock or Block. Who are you taking over Brock Purdy or the other way? And we'll jump right into it. I got a list of quarterbacks here. And Pac hasn't seen this list yet. So this is going to be very fresh. And we're going to start right at the top here with Lamar Jackson. Are you taking Lamar or Brock Purdy?
First of all, I do want to say this. I love Brock Purdy. I think he is an amazing quarterback. I think he's incredibly undervalued in the NFL. I don't think he should be the MVP front runner, but I think he is like more than serviceable. I think you can win with this guy for a very long time, and I think he does everything right in the system. With that being said, I'm nervous that I am going to be very, very harsh with him in this thing because I feel like you're just going to give me a ton of talented quarterbacks. Start off with Brock Purdy or Lamar Jackson. I'm going to be heading to the block. I'm going to give me Lamar Jackson. His skill level is unmatched. He's so athletic. He just has those physical traits that Brock Purdy doesn't have. I'll go with Lamar Jackson.
Let's go with a quarterback that we'll talk about in the next segment. So we don't want to spend too much time here, but Jordan Love.
Wow. Very, very tough because Jordan Love is playing some of the best football in the entire NFL right now. He has a ton of tangible traits that I think we're starting to see why he was drafted. I mean, Chris Collinsworth was comparing him to Patrick Mahomes on Sunday Night Football. I don't think that's quite that. I still think Jordan Love needs more polish to his game. Give me a bit more the seasoned man, even though he's young, Brock Purdy.
Interesting. How about Trevor Lawrence?
Ooh.
I know so you're
I'm
I
not
know
the biggest
this
Trevor
is,
Lawrence yeah. guy. I'm not. I think he does a lot of I think sometimes he doesn't do much and he just gets a ton of praise. And when he's not great, he escapes a lot of criticism, I find. I feel like if Brock Purdy was as poor as Trevor Lawrence sometimes, people would be calling for his job. That being said, this is the number one pick in the league. He's 6'5". He's got one of the best arms in football. He can make every single throw with ease on the field and he's mobile. And I think last night before he got injured, we were starting to see him get into his best form and really click in that offense. I'm going to go with Trevor Lawrence.
Let's go with Justin Herbert, someone that's been very polarizing, right? Because you look at him and you see a 6'6" chiseled god that just can absolutely just throw the ball 100 yards, but he seems to struggle at times and you'd expect more from him. It's almost like he lacks that X factor. Now, does Brock Purdy have it to the point where you favor him over him? Let me hear it.
The one thing I'll say with Justin Herbert this year is there's been so many situations where there's 2 minutes left, he's got the ball with a chance to win, and they come up short. And that is a little bit concerning, but also with Justin Herbert, he may have one of the worst weapons groups in the entire NFL. And I've been vocal about a ton of quarterbacks before. When they don't have good weapons, it's very hard for them to succeed. Head coach, I think, is a disaster. I think all this will be new next year. I still think Justin Herbert is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. I still think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm gonna go with Justin Herbert.
This is an interesting one. I think you're gonna have some trouble here because there's people that love this guy and there's people that seem to sort of think he's whatever and his best days are behind him. But Matthew Stafford,
I would go Brock Purdy. I like Matthew Stafford. He still has games where he puts up very, very good numbers, but he still always has those moments where he maybe tries to force a ball into a window that he shouldn't. And I think Brock Purdy is at this point in his career is just kind of seeing the field a little bit better. And he's just following along with what he needs to do. And sometimes he takes criticism for that, which is crazy. But what Brock Purdy's doing right now is getting a ton of results. And Matthew Stafford's great. He's going to go down as a legend. He's, you know, won a Super Bowl. But right now, I'll take Brock Purdy. I think he's just playing a little bit at a higher level.
Yeah, I agree. If you asked me this question last year, I would have probably taken Matthew Stafford. But it definitely seems like maybe with his health and stuff, his best days could be behind him. But you never know with that guy. He could come in and play lights out for a stretch and make you second guess your opinion. But we're going to go to your guy, Tua Tagovailoa. Are you taking Tua or are you taking Brock?
A lot of similarities in these guys. I think they both run an offense very quickly. I think they capitalize on some great weapons. I think Tua is just, I think he's far more talented. I think he's got the better accuracy. I think he can layer the ball better at every level. I think he's quicker too with his decision making. I would take Tua. I think he's better.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's I didn't expect anything else. I would agree with you regardless. Let's go to another very, very polarizing quarterback who saw a fresh start down in Detroit, getting traded from the Rams a few years ago. And look, let's not beat around the bush here. The Lions are flying right now. Are you taking Jared Goff or are you taking Brock Purdy?
Again, very interesting one. And I've sat here defending Jared Goff a ton. I think he is, again, a very good quarterback that you can win a lot of games with. He also has his fair share of games where he doesn't look that great. He's making a ton of mistakes. I think I would take Brock Purdy. I think I would take him for next Sunday, and I would definitely take him going forward because of age. But I would place these guys in a similar class. They both have great weapons. They both have great teams. I just like Brock Purdy a little bit more right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we got two more on this list. We're going to go with my guy, Dak Prescott. Dak or Brock Purdy?
I think this is an easy one. You have to go Dak Prescott. Even back when he was getting blown out by Brock Purdy in the 49ers, I still thought that the Cowboys were a great team. I still thought that Dak was a great quarterback. Give me Dak Prescott. He, in my opinion, if you're going to take a quarterback to an MVP, it would be him right now.
And the last one on this list, someone that he just beat head-to-head. I think I know the answer, but are you taking Jalen Hurts or Brock Purdy?
Yeah, Jalen Hurts, come on. I know you might answer differently.
No, I'm taking Jalen Hurts as well.
I just think he's got more of the physical tools that you want in a starting quarterback. So I think I've taken Brock Purdy over three guys.
Yeah.
If I were to rank Brock Purdy somewhere in the NFL right now as a starting quarterback, I feel like, I mean, this is just off the top of my head, I feel like he would come in around the 11 or 12 spot for me on my list, which is pretty good for a second-year player that was the last pick in the draft. I think he does everything right at the quarterback, and I think that's all that the 49ers need. And I don't know. I'm very, very sick of the narrative that, like, if your quarterback isn't your best player, if your quarterback has great weapons around him, he's carried or he isn't that good or that anyone can do it. That's definitely not the case. There's one guy who's perfect for this 49ers offense right now, and it's Brock Purdy, and I think he can take this team to a Super Bowl and beyond. So, I know I just took a bunch of guys over him, but that doesn't mean that I don't believe in him as a quarterback for the 49ers.
No, but in your defense, I did give you pretty much
the top 10 quarterbacks.
12 to 13 quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want it, because I think anyone that's disagreeing at that point, whether Brock Purdy is a top 13, 14 quarterback, I think is just lying to themselves. Like, there's a lot of poor quarterbacks, right, in the NFL at the moment, and I don't think it's an ill-advised comment towards Brock Purdy, but I think he's in and around the 12 mark, right? Like, I think he is, like, if he's better than Brock Purdy, he's a franchise quarterback, and like if he's worse than Brock Purdy, you probably look to upgrade him. But like Brock Purdy is in such a unique situation that he almost fits the system, like you mentioned, like perfectly, right? So whether he might be on paper, he might not be one of the more talented quarterbacks in the league, but him in that system makes him highly efficient, highly effective. And I think you're seeing it first time with the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he continues to do his thing there, not turn the ball over, you know, read the field well like he's doing and use the tools that he has around him. Starts with Kyle Shanahan. You got Christian McCaffrey, who's a front runner, or not a front runner, but very, very well in the mix for Offensive Player of the Year. Deebo Samuel looks like he's back to his 2020 or 2021 form. Brandon Ayuk's playing. Like, the 49ers are just such a well-oiled machine that I have a ton of confidence in them going forward as we get into these playoff months. But let's talk about a surging team in the NFC that has just really flipped the script, because they had a great start. They ended up falling to, I believe it was 2-5. And they are now sitting as the 7th seed in the NFC after a massive, massive win over the defending Super Bowl champions on Sunday Night Football. And Jordan Love and these Green Bay Packers, over the last couple weeks, have just really started to win over the hearts of the entire NFL. And my favorite thing about Jordan Love is, before the season, GM Brian Gutekunst said that by Thanksgiving, we'll know if he's our guy going forward. And he kind of extended that after a tough and inconsistent start and said, we're going to give him the back half of the season, and the back half of the season is going to be very, very crucial for Jordan Love. And this guy has earned the title of the future starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers because he has them playing in every game. I preached it, patience, patience, patience. Because if you look at his group of weapons, their skill positions, it's a ton of young talent that he just needed time to click with. But you see it now. He's clicking with Christian Watson, Romeo Dubs, Jaden Reed. And the Packers are absolutely rolling. Jordan Love in his last 3 weeks, 285 yards per game, 8 passing touchdowns, 0 interceptions. There's nothing else you can say than this guy is a future starter in the league for some years to come, and the Packers got a good one.
And he's won massive games over that stretch. Like, it's not just like the fact that they're 3-0 and he's playing this good football, but he's playing the Giants and Chicago, right? He's went into Detroit on Thanksgiving, beat them, beat Casey and the Chiefs, the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes at home on Sunday. And look, this is a team that was 4 weeks ago sitting at 3-6, and people were like, okay, are we in the Caleb Williams, Drake May sweepstakes, or like what's going on here, right? Is Jordan Love not the guy? Are we going to be drafting a quarterback? Are we getting a top five pick? Like, I talked to Packers fans, obviously, that I know, some of my buddies, they were confused, right? They were like, I don't know what to feel. This is a month ago, right? They were sitting at 3-6. It's like, do I cheer for us? Like, do I want us to tank? Like, they were in such a weird spot. And now you've absolutely flipped the switch and you're sitting at 6-6 and you're right in the race. You're absolutely in the race. And you look at the remaining schedule, and I know, like I just alluded to, that so much can change in 3 weeks' time. So we could look back on this and be like, okay, well, look, Carolina could start soaring. Obviously, that's unrealistic. But the Packers' next 5 games, mind you, they're 6-6. They travel to the Giants next week. Then they're at home against Tampa Bay. Then they have a mini road trip in Carolina, in Minnesota. And then they end at home against the Bears. Even if you play 3-2 football here,
they don't play a team with a winning record.
Not a single. And not to mention, their coach, Mr. December, Matt LaFleur, 16-0 in December. 16-0. I know, mind you, he's had probably the best quarterback that we've seen in December and January months. It seems, you know, the run the table stuff with Aaron Rodgers, he's been doing it forever, but that deserves some flowers too. This is a team that's absolutely soaring, that I, for one, would be worried about. If they start clicking at the right time, look, Jordan Love, I mean, there's probably only two guys that I've seen throw with the same motion that he has, and it's him and Aaron Rodgers, right? So all these media reports about how Aaron Rodgers doesn't like him and he's not helping him, he pretty much looks like, if you talk mechanics, I'm not saying he's going to be Aaron Rodgers, but like, he throws the ball exactly how Aaron Rodgers throws the ball, right? And I think he he's jumping in the pocket. He has the ball down here. It's not prototypical, but it works. And you're seeing it first time with the Green Bay Packers. And I think they're going to get into the playoffs just by looking at the schedule.
I'm all in for them on the playoff train too. And I talked about earlier, I think Jordan Love, like, there still needs to be some polish added to his game, but that will come with time. And I'm wondering how this will affect how teams view the quarterback, the management of the quarterback position going forward after the season, because it's very unconventional what Green Bay does. They draft before they need. They let a guy sit for 3 years now. Everyone sort of forgot that Jordan Love existed in a quarterback class that came with Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert and Tua and Jalen Hurts. But he's right in there and proving that he belongs not only to play in this league, but to be a very, very good starter. And the one thing you'll say, they are sitting as the seventh seed right now, and you talked about them being dangerous and maybe teams don't want to see them in the playoffs. The one thing with these low wildcard seeds we always see is they can't get it done. And when they go, you know, on the road against a team with a good quarterback, you're very nervous that they're just going to get blown out. And the fact that he's beaten Justin Herbert, he's beaten Patrick Mahomes on the road, or sorry, Patrick Mahomes was at home as well. But the fact that, like, he's won these games against these top quarterbacks, Jared Goff on the road, another seasoned veteran who's had a very good season, he's not just beating up on your, and no disrespect to your Tommy DeVitos and your Tim Boyles of the world, but he is getting it done toe-to-toe against guys who have been in the playoffs, won those crucial, important games. And he's just showing that he belongs. And I think he's only continuing to get better with his young group of receivers. And, I mean, earlier on in the season, we were crying out that he needs more help. And I still think that is the case. I still think they have needs on this team where they can add and put him in an even better position to succeed. But if you're a Packers fan right now, I think you're absolutely thrilled. And you can say something that so few NFL fans can say in this league, that we have a quarterback, because it's the hardest position to find. And once you find it, you seem to be in and competing for that big dance every single week.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a perfect way to segue into the next one, because there's a team that's been getting it done without having their quarterback. And they're absolutely flying under the radar, and that's the Indianapolis Colts. And they are, to me, one of the most underappreciated stories in the whole NFL this year, right? You look at this team. Losing Anthony Richardson, the whole Jonathan Taylor fiasco early on, and he's now sidelined. This is a team that just coming off four straight wins with Gardner Minshew. They're two games above 500. Michael Pittman is absolutely balling out. Josh Downs having a fantastic rookie season. And then you want to talk first-year head coach Shane Steichen? Like, this team's win total was 6.5 before the season. 6.5. They already beat that. Through 13 weeks, 7-5, two games above 500, they are in a playoff spot. This is a team that, if they had a big market, if they were a big market team, I feel like everyone would be talking about them. This is a team that's no quarterback, no running back. They're 7-5. They're like two games out of the number one seed in the AFC, right? You want to talk about now with the Jacksonville stuff with Trevor Lawrence. Like, this is a team that's in the race. Everyone's talking about Houston. Everyone's talking about Jacksonville. Indianapolis is just sitting here like, hey, what about us?
The Indianapolis Colts are the single best story in the NFL this season. The fact that they are getting it done with what's happened to them, it's remarkable. And I think Shane Steichen should be in the coach of the year conversation, if not leading the
Absolutely.
Race.
Absolutely.
Like, they're holding on to that playoff spot. They're right there with some of the best teams in the AFC. They're competitive each and every week. But because they don't have, I mean, they do have a young star. They have two of them, but they're both injured right now. But because they don't have this player that can sort of win over the media and generate headlines and be talked about, no one seems to care. And nobody is talking about them. Like, I feel like I've seen more buzz about the Titans and the Saints, some of the most uninspiring teams in the league this year, than I have heard talk about the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm just so, so impressed in what this team's doing. And I'll give you a prime example. Josh Dobbs stepped in Minnesota, had a little bit of success early on, and he was just a media darling because he's got a great story in terms of he's been a journeyman. He's got an aerospace engineering degree, which is a fun talking point, and no one really sees it before. Everyone wanted to talk about him for weeks straight, including us. We were a victim of that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Gardner Minshew has been doing this his whole NFL career, stepping in and doing a phenomenal job in relief of a starter. And I honestly think he's winning himself into a conversation where next year, when the quarterback carousel starts, teams are looking at him and saying, I want him to come in. I want him to be our starter. I want him to mentor our young quarterback because he is that good. He can get everything needed done for a team. The Colts are playing complimentary football. They got guys flying way under the radar on both sides of the ball. And I just think this team needs way more love right now.
Absolutely. Like 100%, right? It's almost that the average person doesn't realize how well they're doing, even though it's like the Colts, okay, yeah, they're 7-5. But you look into it and it's like, this is an incredible season, right? Yeah. Michael Pittman, I mean, you want to talk about a guy flying under the radar. This is a guy that's having arguably the best, he's having the best year of his career. And this is a young receiver that's taken a lot of heat because people thought he was one-dimensional. He is more effective with another guy next to him. And I know they have the emerging young star player in Josh Downs who looks very good. But Michael Pittman, man, seems to be catching everything that goes his way. He's putting up, he has 890 receiving yards in 13 weeks, 87 receptions, which I think is the biggest point. He's 13 away from 100, 4 touchdowns. Like, he's balling out. And I like how we're bringing this up here because I know that I see it all the time. Like Colts fans are like, hey, well, like they're leaving comments and like, what about us? Why aren't we getting love? And I think you guys deserve it, man. Like, this is a team that, I genuinely think they are the most underappreciated storyline. Like, if this is another team, if this is a bigger market team, and the Colts are a big market, but you got what I'm saying. If this was a bigger market team, I feel like the media would be all over it.
Alrighty, and we end with our two favorites of the week, the Start Sits powered by Did It and our Locks powered by our friends over at PointsBet. We'll start with the Start Sits because this is the final week of the regular season in fantasy. I wish I had something to play for. I'm already long out, but that doesn't mean that I can't come with some good fantasy advice. You were on fire last week. You told everyone to start Nico Collins. He had one of the best games of his career, almost 200 receiving yards, a touchdown. And then Tank Dell as well went down, which you obviously hate to see.
Yeah, I didn't call Tank Dell getting injured, but yeah.
But that is obviously, and as bad as it sounds to say, that is going to elevate Nico Collins' fantasy stock for the next couple of weeks, especially with Tank Dell out for the season. But yes, we will get into it. This segment is sponsored by our friends over at Did It. If you need one-on-one fantasy advice, Did It is the app for you. You can chat with experts in real time. You can show them your lineup. They can tell you who you need to start, who you need to sit, add, drops, trades. They can do it all. It's the best custom-tailored fantasy advice app for you. Download the Did It app today. Kat, who is your start of the week?
I'm going with Bijan Robinson, someone that's been very, very, very frustrating to own this year. And you just look at this game. It's an absolute must-win game for the Falcons, right? They are at home against the Bucs, and they're looking to get the Saints lost. They're looking to get ahead, right? They could, as crazy as it sounds, one of those teams is going to have to host a playoff game, and the Falcons could really increase their odds with a win over the Bucs this weekend. And I think you're going to see them finally lean into Bijan here, control the game, run the ball, be physical. I think Bijan Robinson's in line for a big game. And how poetic would it be for Bijan Robinson, someone that's been so frustrating from a fantasy perspective, to win that game for you in week 14 and gets you into the playoffs? It's going to happen. Get Bijan Robinson into your lineup and expect a big game from him this weekend against the Bucs.
I like it. I mean, I think we saw flashes of that. Was it 2 weeks ago now? And then he quickly went back to being the Bijan Robinson, just torn down by Arthur Smith in a very unwatchable game against the New York Jets. But I like the shout for him to have a big game. Tough matchup, though, but you know what? Sometimes you just need to rely on your big players, and they can get it done regardless of who they're playing against. I'm going to head over to the AFC West. We got the Broncos and the Chargers going head-to-head. The Chargers, I mean, maybe Brandon Staley needs to keep his job after holding the New England Patriots to 0 points in just a terrific win last week. But I'm going to pick a Bronco to gash the Chargers defense and bring them back down to earth, and that's Courtland Sutton. He has quietly had a phenomenal, phenomenal fantasy season. He's emerged as not only Russell Wilson's go-to guy in the red zone, but pretty much everywhere on the field. He can make the big plays. He's getting those short routes. He's doing well in PPR formats. He's scoring points. Put Courtland Sutton into your lineup. I'm all in on him this week against a very, very weak Chargers defense.
I love it. My sit of the week is Justin Fields. Look, I know what I'm about to say is a little bit contradicting, but the weather's calling for a cold game. Cold, rainy, might even get some snow in there, and you'd think that favors the running quarterback. I think this is going to be the opposite because I don't think he has the passing upside, so it just results in Detroit really keening in on the run. I think this game is going to be low scoring. It's going to be capped. And yeah, I just don't see the upside there with the Lions leaning against it. I think the Lions are more physical. They're going to sort of beat down the Bears, especially if the weather holds up and this is one of those cold, low scoring games. I don't like the upside with Justin Fields. I think there's better options. Justin Fields, unfortunately, it's going to be a tough pill to swallow, but the upside isn't there, which leads me to put Justin Fields on my bench in my must-win week.
Very interesting, especially because of what he did to the Lions last time, but even that could, you know, maybe they learned something from that too, and I think he had over 100 rushing yards last time against the Lions, so maybe they've learned to get him to tone it down a little bit, so I like that one. My sit, I'm going to head over to the Vikings going up against the Raiders. And Justin Jefferson's back, people. What does that mean for Jordan Addison? It means it's time to bring him to the bench. Because let's be honest, even without Justin Jefferson, Josh Dobbs just proved that there's only one ball. There's not enough to go around. Jordan Addison was not nearly as productive as we expected with Justin Jefferson out of the lineup. TJ Hawkinson has really emerged as the number one target in that offense, sans Justin Jefferson. And now that he's back, he's going to be a target machine. They're going to absolutely build their total scheme around him, especially against a very, very weak Raiders secondary. So while you may think, oh, Jordan Addison can fly under the radar now, he can, you know, find those big plays that he was doing very well with Kirk Cousins, we saw those big plays on display 2 weeks ago when Josh Dobbs led him out of bounds on a surefire touchdown. So not to dump on the Pastronaut, but a third option in an offense with a backup quarterback is not something that I would be confident in playing in a must-win fantasy week. Like you said, I just think there's better options out there. Jordan Addison slides to my bench. That is the Stardom Sit'em powered by our friends over at Did It. Once again, download the Did It app today. Chat with Kat. He is available on there. He will take time out of his day to give you custom fantasy advice that you need for your team. First call is free. Download the Did It app. We move on to our locks, powered by our good friends over at Points Bet and Cat. Another 1-1 week for me last week.
The Eagles was
very, very tough. I had the Lions as well, and I was laughing when they went up 21-0. They barely covered the spread in the end.
It was a weird week for the betting space, right? I had the Cowboys 8.5 on Thursday. That was a crazy, crazy game. If I told you the Cowboys were putting up 41 points before the game started, you probably think they covered the 8.5, but they did indeed not cover that spread. I had the Rams. They covered barely at the end there with Kieran Williams' final touchdown. But, I think I have the first pick here, right?
Did you?
You do. Because you picked first last week, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll start it right off. Again, this is powered by PointsBet. Use code BLITZ when you're signing up. My first pick of my 2-0 week this week, I'm going with the Falcons. I just talked about Bijan Robinson, my start sit. I'm going to take the Falcons at home against the Bucs. I think it's a, boring division, but some team's going to have to win it. And I think Atlanta is emerging as that favorite, for me at least, even though they put up like, they won like 13-9 against the Jets on the weekend. But I'm going to take them 2.5. I don't like what the Bucs have shown me as of recent. I think they're trending in the opposite direction. Give me the Falcons. Give me a low-scoring game, but I think they edge it out. Lean on Bijan Robinson. Lead on their skill players if they even want to do that. But Young Hoku maybe gets 17 points by himself here, and the Falcons cover the 2.5 spread against the Bucs.
I like it. It's going to be one of those grimy games. And last time these two teams played, Young Hoku won it on the last-second field goal. So that's right around that 2.5. That's covering the spread. I'm going to head over And I'm going to take the Houston Texans. The division is in reach, and standing in their way is big bad Tim Boyle. It's big bad Trevor Siemian, or potentially Zach Wilson. Nobody knows what's going on in New York, and that makes me very inclined to take a spread that is just one touchdown, especially when you have a quarterback like CJ Stroud who is casually dropping 300 yards a week. I think the Houston offense is going to be too much for even a good Jets defense to handle, and we all know the Jets offense is not scoring more than 20 points. So I like the Texans to win by a touchdown. I'll take them at -6.5.
I like that pick too. My final pick, if you asked me this before the game Sunday night, I would have probably taken the road team here in the Buffalo Bills. But again, give me 2.5 points. Patrick Mahomes at home. Bounce back spot now, which is not good news for the Buffalo Bills, because if the Chiefs had won on Sunday, I might be taking the Bills here, which is lame to think. But look, Chiefs are now in a bounce back spot, and it suddenly is a must win game for them, right? They're 8-4. Like, this team can't drop to 8-5. This is a team that needs this game, and almost more than the Bills, not in a sense, but bad news for the Bills. Chiefs 2.5 at home. Like I said twice on this show already this year, whenever I can get Patrick Mahomes without buying any points and give me that field goal, especially at home, I'm going to take it. And I'm 1-1 in that for now, but I'm looking to improve to 2-1. So give me the Chiefs 2.5 at home against the Bills.
The Chiefs have become a team that I'm kind of scared to take in this segment, because as weird as it is to say, you almost don't know which offense is going to show up every week. But with that as well, I think we're all going to act surprised in February when they win the Super Bowl again, because that's just what Patrick Mahomes does in this league. So it's crazy. They don't look that great right now. That scared me away from taking that game, because even the Bills, like, this is a game where I think they have a good chance in. But again, they're just, both teams have been so inconsistent this year. I just stayed away completely. I'm going to end off with the red hot Green Bay Packers. Yes, they got the passing paisano. They're playing on the road, but it's Monday Night Football. It's another chance for Jordan Love to showcase not only to the Green Bay organization that he's the guy going forward, but also to all of America that he is a future star in this league. They're only 6.5-point favorites. It's a Monday Night doubleheader, which is one of the worst ideas ever, but I love the Green Bay Packers to win and cover in this game. Those are our best bets of the week, powered by our friends over at PointsBet. If you are signing up, use code Blitz when you do so. But there you have it, the locks of the week. I'm 16-11 on the season, so I'm just trying to finish above 500. That means I'm not losing money by the end of the year. I'm looking in a decent spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been fairly solid. I think the starts and sits maybe gets the edge this year, which is crazy because last year we were pretty money with these spread picks, but that's the way she works in the NFL world. And that's going to wrap up today's show. I mean, it felt a little weird doing it Tuesday morning. I like it at times. I also maybe favor the Monday night a little bit, but it is what it is, right? Again, thank you for sticking with us. If you made it this far, like, comment, let us know if you appreciated the episode. Maybe I was thinking maybe one day we're going to bring out, or maybe we could do a weekly thing, but maybe we'll start doing Q&As, maybe two or three, a show, that way to get you guys a little bit more involved here. But appreciate you guys taking this far. We'll see you guys next Tuesday, and enjoy week 14.
Take care.